Senate Finance, it's 5 minutes after nine on March 9th. Welcome Senator Bundy, Senator Olson, Senator Stedman. Senator Stedman's a little under the weather here this morning, but he's loaded up with NyQuil and he's going to try to stay with us as long as he can. We've got some folks traveling today. I should let the committee know. Senator Hoffman and Senator Dyson are on their way to Energy Council. Senator Green is on her way to Texas. Curtis's mother has been ill, and Senator Green yesterday was called to Texas. The family is gathering together to give her strength in these difficult times. So we wish Senator Green well, and her mother-in-law, Curtis's mother also. So hold her in her thoughts, and both ladies in our thoughts and prayers. So, but the four of us are here, and we're going to do some work today. So purpose of today's meeting, first we'll bring back HB 64. Expect to pass that out. Representative Hawker is here. Then we're going to bring up a new bill, Senate Bill 63, having to do with seatbelt signs, and we don't think that'll take very long. And then we'll start the consideration of House Bill 1, which is the education funding formula bill, and start public testimony on that. We have a lot of folks that are interested in that, and we have a number of folks on the teleconference network, and we know you're there, and we're getting a list of those that are out there, and we'll announce those as they come in. And for public testimony, we'll try to take you in the order that the names are given to the committee. So stand by with us. We see you, and we'll let you know we see you here by name in just a few minutes. Anything else to come before the committee before we begin our deliberations? Okay, seeing none, here's one special thing I'd like to do before we begin. We have a government class here, and the teacher is here with us again this year. So would you mind just standing up and telling who you are, what school you go to, and have the kids stand up, and we'll just say hi to the kids that are visiting us this morning. A little closer to the microphone, if you would, there.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that. My name is Lori Robert Scandling, and I am the principal of Juneau's Alternative High School, which has a Tlingit name, Yakuska Dakihiti, which means House of Knowledge, and I teach a government class as well as work as an administrator. My students are here today. I won't introduce them by name, but I'll have them stand up. I like them to see government in action, and we are privileged enough to live in the Capitol, and I try to bring them up to the Capitol when possible. If my class would stand just for a moment.
Let's say good morning, those kids.
A few other members are interviewing legislators and will arrive shortly, so thank you.
Nice to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time. Okay, with that, let's bring back before us House Bill 64, having to do with extending the Board of Public Accountancy. And with that, Representative Hawker is back. Good morning, Mike, if you would, please. We held this yesterday for any discussion. Is there anything else that's come before the committee we need Representative Hawker for? Representative Hawker, anything to add to the discussion?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Mike Hawker. In our first hearing, the president of the Board of Accountancy was not in attendance here. Mr. Tirola is available today should the committee have any questions, sir.
Steve, good morning. He's joining us from Homer. Any discussion before we pass the bill out of committee, Steve?
This is Steve Tirola, chair of the Alaska Board of Public Accountancy. No, I just urge you to pass it on. Thank you.
Hey, Mike, thanks for joining us this morning from Homer. Anything else? Senator Bundy.
Motion.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman,
I find it. Nope, wrong bill. We move from committee with individual recommendations, HB 64, extending the Board of Public Accountancy, and see if that adds up to anything.
Is there objection to passing House Bill 64 from committee with attached fiscal notes? Seeing none, House Bill 64 passes from committee. Thank you, Representative Hawker, for being here this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
Let's bring before us a new bill, Senate Bill 63, sponsored by Senator Ben Stevens, an act relating to road signs encouraging the use of safety belts. Oh, and there he is, just appears from out. Morning, Senator Stevens.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
We have before us Senate Bill 63, and if you would please present it. And we are considering version G. So, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Stevens, representing Senate District N. It's a pleasure to be back before you at 9 in the morning again. I'm kind of missed these days. But this is a very simple bill, Mr. Chairman, and it was brought to me by request of a constituent who had the unfortunate experience of losing their son in an automobile accident in front of Service High School about a year ago last fall. And so she came to me and she said she was trying to find a way to have a memorial sign near the location of where the accident occurred that would encourage people to use a seatbelt. And she went into the program that the Department of Transportation has, which is a memorial sign program, but at the time there was only several signs that were allowed to use. One is don't drink and drive, and the one is just please drive safely. And she wanted to have one that said, buckle up for safety. And so she sort of got caught in the quagmire of trying to get the sign that she wanted, and it wasn't getting anywhere, so she approached me and said, could you help out? And this was the quickest way that we saw that would allow for the department to erect signs in the right-of-way near the location of a traffic fatality that occurred as a result of not wearing a seatbelt. And that's about the end of it, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator. The name of that young man is Nathan Kempen?
That's correct. It's an uncodified law that would say the Nathan Kempen Act that would allow these signs to be put up. And that was my addition, not the request of the individual.
For the committee's information, version G is before us. Version Y was passed to us, and the differences between the two is that the Senate Transportation removed line 5, which was this act shall be known as the Nathan Kempen Act. And the bill sponsor has asked that we adopt and consider G and not take Senate Transportation's changes. And so that's why G is in front of us. Is that correct, Senator Stevens?
That's correct. And if the record states from Transportation that certain people have just sort of policy issues about legislative intent and uncodified law, and that's was really the only reason why it was taken out, and for no other reason. And the record states in Transportation that if this committee so chose, it could put it back in. And so that's what I'm requesting that the committee do.
All right. Questions of the bill's prime sponsor? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look at the fiscal note and I see a zero number there, and certainly the cost is going to be, is listed there at $500. And how does a person go about putting up this sign in other places where either other people have been killed or there is the potential of having an accident?
I think DOT can speak to the zero fiscal note, and I think they're here.
Yeah, Nona Wilson is here if you'd like to have her come to the table, Senator.
But the way the process works, Senator Olson, is that it's by request. Memorial signs are by request. And then the department determines whether they can put the sign up in the right of way without obstructing either traffic or other types of equipment and not to jeopardize the safety of the flow of traffic.
Senator Olson?
And who pays for it, and how many do you anticipate?
Ms. Wilson, if you would, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. My name is Nona Wilson. I'm the legislative liaison.
A little closer to that microphone, if you would, Nona, please.
My name is Nona Wilson. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Through the chair, Senator Olson, in response to your question, there's an application process, and usually a 30-day review within the Department of Transportation, where we would determine sign plate, well, if we would grant a sign according to the regulations and criteria that we have to follow for our traffic manual and federal rules. If it is approved, the sign would be placed somewhere not necessarily at the exact point of the accident, but at an appropriate place where it wouldn't cause clutter or inhibit sight distance or anything. As to the fiscal note, we don't know how many signs eventually would be placed, but DOT would absorb that cost, and it's usually about $500, and that falls under the DOT Memorial Sign Program, so it's something that's already in place.
Other questions of DOT or the bill's prime sponsor? Senator Stedman?
Mr. Chairman, I think there's another verbiage change from Y to G also on line 8. I think deleted out of Y was at or near. In the community I live in, there's accidents from time to time, and there are some road signs that go up, memorials or reminders to people to drive carefully because some intersections are more dangerous than others. And sometimes it's hard to get DOT's attention on dangerous intersections and to get them ranked high enough to have them repaired. So anyway, I'd just like to point that out, that, you know, this is being done in some other communities, and I've never had any negative feedback on it.
Thank you, Senator Stedman, for pointing that out. On page 1, line 5, the version Y also inserted the words or near in that version. Senator Stevens, any concern about that?
I think it's really a use of, you know, your grammatical choice at the site, or, you know, the other version would be the exact location of. We don't have that. So at the site would be, the site would be the, in the definition that we wrote and that the drafters wrote, at the site is near the site, not the exact location. So as long as the department has the discretion to erect it where they see fit, that's the reason, yeah.
Okay, we're not going to pass this bill out today. We're going to work on the changes between them and reconcile those and then bring it back and make sure we're all squared away. But so we can work on that one too, Senator Stedman. Okay, anything else on Senate Bill 63? Senator Stedman.
Let me just follow up so there's no misinterpretation of my comments. I think it's more on point to try to have DOT locate the signs as close to the proximity of the accident as possible. You know, given that they've got to keep, or there's concern with egress and ingress on the highway, and those things that just kind of taken for granted. But clearly, they're much better off to keep the sign close. I think it actually means more. And then for the people that in smaller communities, and then people in larger communities that actually know the person involved, I think it is more of a reminder.
Other discussion on Senate Bill 63? Senator Stevens, anything to add?
No, thank you for hearing, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, there's no one, I think, on teleconference for 63. No? Okay. With that, we'll set the bill aside, and thank you for being here this morning, Senator. Nona, thanks for being here. Okay, let's go to, just a moment, please.
Yeah, that answered for me.
All right, let's get organized here. And while we're doing that, where is Representative Gatto? Oh, there he is, right over there. Representative Gatto, come join us at the table. And your bill is House Bill 1, having to do with the student dollar legislation. And if you were there at the end of the table, and then let me get the teleconference networks set up here for a moment, if you would. Okay. So far on the teleconference network, we see folks in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kodiak, Homer, Sitka, Kenai, Seward, and off-net. We do have one lady, Peggy Cowan from the Juneau School District, who has asked if she could provide her testimony as soon as Representative Gatto is finished. She has a time constraint this morning. Superintendent Cowan, are you with us?
Thank you so much for your consideration.
Can you stand by for about another 5 minutes while Representative Gatto presents his bill?
Certainly. Thank you.
Okay, then we'll be to you, and then we'll We'll line folks up and take public testimony. So with that, good morning, Representative Gatto, if you would. House Bill 1.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Representative Carl Gatto, representing Palmer. House Bill 1 is before us on March 9th, which I'm very happy to see that we've gone this far for such an important bill. It's a big bill, but it's only it's six lines. Two lines for the title, two lines for the bill, and one line for the effective date. And I'm going to try to be very simple. It amounts to $70.01 million increase to the student base allocation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Gatto. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gatto, I've seen any number of numbers bandied about, from amazingly high to the governor's number, and just wondering what was behind the number you chose. What was the justification for this number, and why it is a better number than, say, the governor's number or the kids' count number?
Certainly, we did the same thing this year that we did previous years, and that's contact each school district, usually Southeast, Kenai, Anchorage, Matsu, Fairbanks, and the Bush, and talk to each individual district as far as possible to see how much money would be appropriate. And the purpose of that is to simply see if we have agreement that says a certain percent increase. And when you have consistency on a certain amount of dollars, then you feel comfortable that the amount of money you're requesting is at least across the board. No one is exaggerating. The governor had proposed a $61.1 million increase, and the Education Committee came up with $65.4 million. That was a number that I kind of wondered myself how adequate or inadequate it was, because the schools all definitely asked for more than that. But it still had some future to go, and I'm pretty sure that it went to the next committee, there would be another increase, and following that, possibly even another one. In the HES committee, it went up to 65.4 million. I'm sorry, it went up to 70.1 million. The education committee was 65.4. And that's where it stopped. House finance didn't increase it any further, which is an indication that we've probably reached the maximum that we could find on the House side. And now we're just waiting for the Senate to respond and see what your numbers would be. Now we work together to compare them and adjust one or the other.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy.
So I'm guessing that this education is, like we've done in the past, a combination of our best guesses and our wish lists.
Well, Senator, it certainly is. We can say without hesitation how much money we would have to allocate to meet somebody's wish. But the wishes varied so much. I'll give you an example. From $152 million proposed by NEA to $111 million proposed by Alaska Kids Count to AASB, Alaska Association of School Boards, to $85.8 million, and down to what the Finance Committee on the House side finally agreed to, which was $70.1 million, down to the governor's. So you're right. If we all agreed, that would be wonderful, but we can't. We use different numbers, and
right,
so it's always balanced by other things for education besides just this student base allocation.
Senator Bundy?
And these numbers you mentioned, their totals, how much of that money actually goes to the classroom? We
have a reduction of $38.1 million for PERS TERS. That is the most significant reduction in the amount.
So when we talk about this, at least for the public, if I might, Mr. Chairman, we ought to take $38 million off the top, because that's really not going to go into the classroom. So we're talking about $100 million for increase for schools. It's not $100 million that's going into the classroom. And then in addition to that, there are, I think a state law says we should put maximum of the money into the classroom and a minimum into administration, and there are a number of school districts that aren't able to do that as well. So that number that actually goes to the classroom gets ratcheted down even more.
Well, you're absolutely right. I know in the Mat-Su district, they are very proud to say that they actually put about 90% goes into the classroom and a small amount for administration. And in the smallest districts, it's probably closer to 65% that actually goes in the classroom because of their very, very difficult to reach dollars that it costs simply to operate in smaller communities. So you're right, it varies, but we do allocate more money to the rural districts than to the urban districts, and hopefully that's the reason that we do it, is because they do have higher operating costs. We're trying to find out what the balance is, and we're not accountants, but we do do our best to come up with the correct number.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one final comment and request. As you're aware, there are many demands on the budget. The supposed windfall, in my mind, doesn't exist because we're almost $6 billion in debt to prison tours and well over $5 billion in debt to the CBR. So we have huge debts, many demands, many interests, many needs, many wants. In order to come up with whatever number it is we decide for schools, 60 million an addition, 100 million addition, in your proposal, what is the, not just the increase, what is the total then that the public school budget would be?
Well, we just subtract 38 from the 70, which is 32 million increase
over
from the previous year.
And that totals what?
Total.
If we take last year's school funding and add 32 million, I'm looking for a total for the audience.
854 million.
So 854 million, which is the largest thing we fund except for the permanent fund dividend. And have you given some thought to where we should get the 800 plus million dollars?
Well, that's why we have a general fund.
But
we're to keep getting it year after year after year, hopefully from the places we have been getting it, that is from the resource development, the revenues from there. And are you suggesting at some point we won't be able to add any more?
I'm suggesting that we have a finite budget, and if I might, Mr. Chairman, and that as the demands and the population keeps growing, we're going to have to cut somewhere else if we're going to keep adding money to education. And of course, I've asked the school district to come see me, tell me who else I should cut so that their demands can be met, or let us join us and promoting access to new funds, which of course would be the earnings of the permanent fund. Eventually, that was designed to support state services, and I get a little frustrated with school districts that come and just say, with their hand out, and just demand money without being willing to be part of the solution. And I get extremely frustrated when I know there are some school districts that make no local contribution, and even those districts that make local contribution, there's only four of them to pay 100% of what they could pay. My own personal district could balance their budget tomorrow if they just pay 100% of what they're allowed to pay. So I'll be through lecturing, but I'm using you as a conduit.
Well, thank you, Senator.
Welcome to Senate Finance. Thank you, Senator Bendy. Other discussion for the bill's prime sponsor before we begin public testimony? Senator Stedman, briefly.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to note that I think this increase is a 7.5% increase over last year. And the year in last year's was a 9.6. So over the last 2 years, it's roughly an 18% increase. And you know, my concern here as we work through this, and clearly I think there's the momentum here to increase school funding and there's a recognized need. But also I think we need to pay attention to the communities to watch their funding level so the burden isn't just shifted to the state, but we actually share that burden and go forward together.
Good observation, Senator Stedman. Thank you. Other discussion of the bill's prime sponsor? Representative Gatto, why don't you come and join us at the table at Senator Green's seat. Representative Newman is here from the House Special Committee on Education. He'd like to join us at Senator Dyson's chair. He's not here today. Any other legislators in the room? Okay. Let's begin public testimony. We're going to go to Superintendent Cowan here in just a moment. By my rough count, we have 37 people that want to talk to us this morning. We have 1 hour and 29 minutes. And so out of respect for all those folks, including those in the room that have come out this morning, I'd like to get them all in. So if I appear to have an iron hammer and be a little curt on the length of the testimony, it's because we want to make sure everybody is heard from this morning. It's not a difficult bill, and it's not a difficult subject, but there's lots of different facets. So I have a timer, and I'm going to ask folks to limit their testimony to no more than 3 minutes. And if you can say yay or nay in less than 3 minutes, it would be much appreciated by the other 36 people that are waiting to testify this morning. So let's begin public testimony, and we'll start with Superintendent Cowan at Juneau, and then we're going to go alphabetically. We'll take two people from each LIO site, and then we'll circle back around, and we'll include Juneau with the folks here in the room as one of the LIO sites. I'm going to ask, after we get done with Anchorage, I'm going to ask Carl Rose to be number three, and then we'll go from there. So with that, Peggy, thank you for joining us this morning. If you would, please, your testimony on House Bill 1.
Thank you, and I'm appreciative of your consideration of my previous schedule, and I'll try to respect yours and be brief. I'm truly grateful to be an educator in the state of Alaska. I love the state and think that the education is the best way to contribute to its future. I'm lucky to be superintendent in Juneau. As your recent conversation, this community prioritizes education and is reflected by the assembly traditionally funding to the cap. This last year, they raised property tax to be able to increase the amount of local contribution that your state increase allowed. And I'm grateful to both the state and the local assembly for those increases last year. That increase stopped devastating cuts, but it did not provide resources to do more, continue to reallocate resources to target them and provide the best education we can. This year, we are at the same place. At 4,919, the Juneau School District will need to cut $300,000 from our budget next year. The board will decide, probably between secondary counselors, textbooks, budget, buses, or reducing custodial. The school board resolution from the Juneau School District responded to a lot of what you've been hearing and our own individual budget. The Community Budget Advisory Committee recommended $5,433 as their number for a base allocation. The school board resolution was more modest and asked for $5,120 to eliminate cuts and to improve student achievement here in Juneau. I believe the future of the state is in our students, and the future of our students depends on public education, and I urge you to increase the amount that you've allocated.
Thank you, Superintendent Cowan. Any questions of the superintendent? Thanks again for joining us this morning.
Consideration.
You bet. And thanks, Peggy. We have a, just so everyone knows, we have a House Bill 1 public comments that have come over to our offices and to the Senate Finance Secretary. House Bill 1 comments are part of the record, and as those come in, we'll continue to add to that file as this bill is considered to this committee. Let's go to Anchorage, and in Anchorage we have Bill Bjork and Tim Steele is with us. Good morning, Bill. If you would, please, your testimony on House Bill 1, and please limit your testimony to 3 minutes.
I shall. Good morning, Chairman Wilkin and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Bill Bjork. I serve as a president for more than 12,500 members of NEA Alaska. I've submitted written testimony, and I believe you have that, so I will try to be brief in deference to the other 36 souls out here waiting to speak to you this morning. But I would like to just run through the highlights of the testimony, if I would, Senator Wilkin. To begin with, I want to give you a hearty thank you for last year's efforts. The entire $82 million increase to public education was appreciated and needed by all of us in the education community. It was enough to cover the increases in PERS-TERS contribution and inflation and put $27 million into instructional programs. If we were teetering on the edge last year, on the edge of dramatic cuts throughout the state, and that money forestalled that for 1 year. I want to be real clear about committee substitute for House Bill 1 from the HESS committee with a base student allocation of $4,919. It does not meet the needs of a single school district in Alaska. As a matter of fact, the statements by many legislators acknowledge that $49.19 is not an adequate base student allocation and isn't going to meet the needs of our schools for fiscal 6. It will cover the increases in PERS and TERS. It does cover inflation, but it only provides about $9 million that actually hits the classroom. It does not avoid layoffs, and layoffs, we are in the people business, and layoffs will be the end result, as you've heard Superintendent Collin testify to already today. Alaska needs a revenue source for K-12 education, and several proposals for revenue sources are already in bill form and before this legislature. Senate Bill 88 and House Bill 143 provide the opportunity to draw from the CBR and the earnings reserve account, which total over $4.2 billion. To add an additional $50 million to House Bill 1 would only require a little over 1% of those reserves. Another option is a percent of market value contained in House Joint Resolution 11 and Senate Joint Resolution 8. And of course, there's an option to tap the windfall money from this year. You are the experts as to the finances of the state, and I'm sure you know many other options available for a long-term fiscal plan for Alaska, and I applaud your efforts. On behalf of 133,000 students and the 12,500 teachers and education support professionals, I implore you to look at a solution for long-term funding for K-12 education in Alaska. Please build on the efforts of your colleagues in the House to increase the base student allocation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill, for your testimony. Well done and well timed. And we do have your 2 pages of testimony, which you just summarized very well. Questions of Mr. Bjork? Okay. Thanks again, Bill. Let's go to Tim Steele, and then we'll ask Carl Rose to join us at the table. Carl, if you'd come forward, please. Morning, Tim, representing the Anchorage School Board. Please introduce yourself and your testimony, please.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin, and members of the committee. I am Tim Steele. I am president of the Anchorage School Board, and I am here representing the school board. As you know, there's a lot of numbers out there, as you said, as Carl Gatto said also. The number that we currently have in House Bill 1 is not one of those numbers and is not adequate for anyone. The Anchorage School Board discussed this for a significant period of time, and in public forum, we took testimony. And our break-even point, in order to not have to make the cuts that are currently in our proposed budget, is 50-27. That would be a status quo funding. In our budget currently, we have position cuts to teachers, staff, administrators, cuts in supplies. We would like a number, and it's passed in our resolution, and I believe you have a copy of that. If our number is 5120, that is the number that we requested. That would allow for a bit of growth. That would allow us to consider the reversal of some of the cuts that we made this year. It would allow us to make an investment in student data systems, in textbooks that are drastically needed, and in classroom size reduction to the extent that we can do that with our capital limitations, our space limitations. But we would like the 5120. We believe that that number is a number that would benefit most districts in the state in terms of growth. We would request that and hope that that this committee would consider that. Thank you,
Tim. Questions of Mr. Steele? Thanks for joining us.
In looking at the districts that do provide local support, Juno mentioned they go to 100%, and I believe there are only three others in the of the 34 districts that apply local support. Would you support a resolution asking all local districts to fund up to 100% of what they are allowed to fund under state law? I believe that would bring in another $40, $50 million.
The school board has not taken a stand on that. I think that that it would be appropriate for everybody to fund what they can. We in Anchorage fund up to a local cap that we have. I believe the interpretation of the state cap as being where every local government ought to fund is wrong. That cap is there to implement state law to minimize disparity between the haves and have-nots in this state. If you move everybody up to the maximum, what you have done is maximize disparity between the haves and have-nots, and I don't believe that's adequate or that's appropriate.
So let's leave that discussion for...
I would look at that a little differently.
That's a discussion we'll have at a different time, but it's a good discussion. Let's come down to Juno, and we're going to hear from Carl Rose and Lori Scanlon. And Carl, if you would, please, good morning. You have a three-minute testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. Much discussion about funding has taken place up until this point. I don't believe that the Senate has been engaged in much of the active discussion, and I would like to share with you, it's a matter of record, I've put in written testimony, but you have a couple of charts. The one chart that I'm showing you here will show since the advent of Senate Bill 36, we've had a relatively flat level of funding, and I'm using the BSA, the base student allocation, as the measuring point. The first increase that we saw in the BSA that was sizable came in 04. That was a $159 increase. Last year, we received a considerable increase, and that was to 4576. What the trend that you see here is, and the reason I want to bring this up is this wasn't guesswork. What we're trying to do is increase a trend over a period of time to recover from the flat level of funding that we've experienced over the last 8 years. I will share with you some of the documents that we have. Inflation proofing to the 05 budget is inappropriate because we weren't whole in 05. In 05, we were simply starting the stage of recovery and to apply a three-year average of the Anchorage CPI to a figure that is not whole is inappropriate. That produced $24 million on behalf of the governor. I know my time is short here. We're about at the last stages of this discussion, and I don't know the extent that we've had a discussion here in the Senate, but I will tell you this. At the levels of funding today, we will be sending out some pink slips, and these pink slips are going to be real. If we decide before the 15th or anytime soon, at the $70 million figure that is currently included in 4919, we are going to be laying off some people. And there is no hope for these folks. The message will be a strong one that you will be losing your jobs. We'll be curtailing opportunities for kids. I will share with you this. The association is asking for $49.95, represents $85 million, $23 million over what the governor has proposed. Just a brief history. In 04, the governor's proposed budget was a reduction of $40 million to education. We recovered from that, rolled in the logs. We received $159 in the end result. That was an increase. Last year, the proposal was to hold us harmless to 04. We were able to get $82 million. $36 million of that went to PERS and TERS. The other $46 million went to operating and instruction. Operating and instruction. The $49.95 that we propose, $85 million, will provide $38 million for PERS and TERS, and will provide $47 million to go to operation and instruction. The incline that I'm showing you here is represents those numbers. What we do in 07 will be a continued challenge, and the issue of reoccurring revenue is one that we have to deal with. I implore you, I challenge the Senate to meet the challenge that the governor came in with $62 million. The House has improved on that to $70 million, and I challenge the Senate to improve this number. Our base figure is $49.95, and we have members of our association who have needs that exceed that number. Thank you very much.
Questions, Mr. Rose?
Senator Bundy?
Thank you, and as maybe you can speak for your association. I've heard from them often over the years, particularly those people who live in REAAs, that they'd like to contribute something to their schools, but they don't have the mechanism. There's a bill currently in play that would allow rural areas to do what they've asked to be able to do, contribute to their schools. I'm wondering what your association's reaction will be to granting that request, giving them a bill, that mechanism. And two, do they understand that it's difficult to ask people who make local contribution to continue to do that if there are others throughout the state who choose not to make local contribution?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if we would get to Senate Bill 112.
But I forgot the number.
I've been present at most of the testimony, and I have heard people from the rural areas saying that you behave as the borough assembly, if you will, oversight assembly for the unorganized borough. And I've heard them ask to be taxed and not to be mandatorily borrowed. I've heard that discussion, and I think there's a rising awareness within my own association as we do our resolutions annually. There is a concern by many of our members who do contribute about this continued effort to not address the issue of, number one, consolidation, number two, mandatorily borrowing, and to get people to contribute. That is an active discussion within my association. We don't have a formal position on this one, but I agree with you. I have heard that testimony. People asking, if you need to tax us, but just don't force us to have another level of government. With reaction to my folks, and I think I may have already answered this, there is a growing awareness that people are contributing in the organized boroughs and municipalities. And there is some concern, how do we deal with this in the unorganized area? Of course, impact aid, PL 874 monies.
Earl, I've got to cut you off.
Okay.
I think what you said is it's a discussion for another day.
I would agree.
So that's two discussions for another day that we've come up with. So
thank you.
If I could, please, but with all respect, we need to get through this testimony. Thank you, Carl, for being here this morning. Lori, if you'd join us, then we're going to go to Fairbanks. So if those folks in Fairbanks, Patty Pisha and Sue Hall, would please gather around the microphone. We'll be to you in just a moment. Good morning, Lori. Thanks again for joining us. Your testimony,
please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Lori Robert Scanley, and I am the principal of Yakuskadaki Hiti Alternative High School here in Juneau. I was born and raised in Alaska. Gary and I went to the same high school. I worked 25 years in public and private sector before becoming a teacher at about age, well, I won't say. But I now work at the alternative high school here in Juneau, which serves about 100 students who have dropped out. By definition, you must be 16 and not attending school. My government class is here, as you know, and I want to let you know if we leave, we don't mean to be rude, but they have other classes today, and I'm harsh on attendance, so we will perhaps leave prior to the end of the conversation. It's the students, though, who are not here that I wish to represent today, and I want to connect the dots for you quickly and put a face on a number. I keep hearing numbers. The base student allocation passed by House Finance and by the House of 4919 translates into a $300,000 cut for my district. Now, assuming the cost differential study is not going to be acted on, which would bring about $1.5 million additional to our district, I want to tell you some real consequences for the young Alaskans who are here, and especially those who are not here. Because our district is short on fiscal space, we're working to build a new high school that will open in about 3 years. The district must rent space to house my dropout program. As of this morning, I had 31 students, potential students on a waiting list, ages 16 to 21. I cannot fit one more teacher or student into my space, which is a little bit larger than your suite here and the offices. If there is a $300,000 cut from my district, we will not have the funds to pay rent on a larger space. It's that simple. If we can't afford the larger space, I can't accept my wait list. If I can't accept the wait list, my student enrollment will remain artificially low. If my enrollment remains low, restricted by square footage, I cannot qualify for another half-time position that my per pupil count could qualify me for otherwise, which I need to teach science. I don't have a science teacher. Students need 2 science credits to graduate in the state of Alaska. Next year, under No Child Left Behind, it'll be the last year I can issue credits without a science teacher for science. So without the additional rental monies for a larger space, I can accept the students, which would increase my graduation rate and allow us to qualify for a 0.5 person to teach science to issue the credit so students can get a diploma. Alaska's Constitution requires a free public education. I have 31 dropouts on a wait list for whom this constitutional promise cannot be delivered. I appreciate what Senator Bundy said. Then where's the money? I live in a state, I grew up in a state, that has $30 billion in the bank. When the permanent fund was envisioned, the dividend was not even in the conversation.
I see now
that a portion of the earnings may go to a gas line. This is our reality. I'll pay an income tax. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Lori, for your testimony and for bringing your charges in this morning. We appreciate your attendance. Let's go to Fairbanks and take two folks there. First up is Ms. Patty Apicia. Patty, good morning. If you would, your testimony, please, and whom you represent.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you.
Okay,
fine.
Great. Thanks for this opportunity to address this critical issue. My name is Patty Pika, and I represent the Council of PTAs here in Fairbanks. There's a lot of talk about annual yearly progress, and I feel like annual yearly progress cannot occur for our schools until there is annual yearly progress in seeking the resources to accomplish that end. We now support 5120 as the BSA. Last night, while attending a Lathrop PTA meeting, I listened to concerns about the need for improved technology in the North Star Fairbanks School District. With increased technology comes the need for training to teachers to effectively use that technology. Fairbanks currently is in the enviable position of having a very strong leader to develop technology in our schools. Proper technical tools and training give teachers the avenue to communicate efficiently with parents and give parents daily information about their child's progress in school. Timely parent involvement will make the difference between success and failure. My son, who is a junior, currently has two classes, which are between 27 and 30 students. That many bodies in a classroom often requires simply crowd control. I don't consider that teaching. Effective technology combined with smaller class size will allow schools to meet the needs of all students in the Fairbanks School District. And kind of tagging on with what the last person was testifying on.
Are you there, Patty? Patty? Did we lose Fairbanks? Okay, Patty, if you can hear us, we'll be back to you shortly. Let's go to Kenai. Dr. Donna Peterson and Sammy Crawford are the first two on the list. Ms. Peterson, good morning. If you would please, your testimony on House Bill 1.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Superintendent of Schools for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I will do my best to temper my remarks and to be brief. House Bill 1 provides the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District with the opportunity to pay our increased fuel costs in the 18 schools heated with high-cost fuel oil or propane and to pay the retirement obligations for our current employees. Since there are about 70 fewer of them over the past 3 years, we'll be spreading the cost over those that are left. Obviously, we are thankful that at this point, we aren't going to have to cut other positions in order to meet these fixed obligations. But the false hope that our school district could do much of anything to affect instruction, the large class sizes, or to bring back vocational, music, art, physical education, or other offerings is wrong. The amount proposed in HB 1 simply won't do it. Information is power, and Lori put a face on this problem. I would like to share three informational items with you in this testimony. The first is what it looks like, what school looks like for our current juniors in high school. Beginning in their seventh grade year, 5 years ago, the course offerings began being reduced in Kenai. The district was desperately trying and doing everything possible to work smarter and more efficiently so the classrooms would be the last impacted. We have done it all, shared services, administration, nursing, counseling, secretaries, they're gone. And we've done everything up to and including closing a school. Now, that wasn't much fun, but it was necessary. As seniors in high school next year, that group has done without textbooks, desks in some cases, and certainly without the rich array of opportunities traditionally associated with schools. Couple that with their increased requirements for graduation, and you can understand that when I talk to them, they think the adults in their world have royally screwed up. I don't blame them. What price have they had to pay for the lack of investment? The second piece of information I'd like to share with you is about the cost study. For 6 years, we've been going to Juno, talking with you. We've followed the rules. We've funded to the cap. You told us to be patient. You told us to wait. The statutory requirements of SB 36 require this review. It's late, but it's right. There's no other district in this state as underfunded as the Kenai Peninsula Borough. What would we have done with that money? Wow, can you imagine classrooms in our 16 schools under 100 students? Can you imagine vocational? Can you imagine rooms? The 44 schools on the Kenai Peninsula need immediate and substantial financial help, well beyond that provided in HB 1. We've finally hemorrhaged. The bleeding and reductions can no longer be contained by the Band-Aid fixes being applied in the area of funding. The last piece of information is anecdotal. 6 years ago, when we interviewed people,
Superintendent Peterson, could I ask you to summarize, please?
A teacher or a principal, and they were going to homeschool.
Superintendent Peterson, 4 years ago,
the majority of answers were, I'm heading to Matt Sewer Anchorage because that's where the jobs are.
Superintendent Peterson, could I ask you to summarize, please?
Yes, sir. I'd like you to picture the bright flame. When I look each of these 9,500 students in the eye, I want to know why they're less valuable than anybody else in the state.
Thank you, Superintendent Peterson, for your testimony this morning. And before we go to Sammy Crawford and circle back to Fairbanks, thank you, Representative Newman and Representative Gatto, for joining us this morning. We have House session at 10 o'clock. Representative Newman, a comment?
Mr. Chair, just some observations and some comments that I'd like to say while we're working through this process, while I've been through the process, is at the $70 million range, we also can't forget that schools, we need new schools in the Mansfield Borough. We have HB 13, which is coming to the process now. And if we get BSA too far out, how are we going to cripple the abilities to, how is it going to affect the abilities to get HB 13 through, which is new bonding, payment of past 70, 30 muni bonds, any chance for early funding for education, chances for possibly a two-year funding education while we have the money to do this. If we can't do that, special allocations for schools. On top of this, we have to look at, we have over $641 million in deferred maintenance that we're going to have to look at special allocations to certain school districts. We have a lot of needs. There's only a certain amount of money for schools. If we stick it all in BSA, how are we going to, is it going to hinder the abilities to try and capture some of these other projects that do also need to happen? We have new district cost factors that have came out. If we get BSA too far ahead to implement new district cost factors, it's going to put those numbers that much further out of reach. How much is it going to hinder the ability to try and look at these new district cost factors? There's just some of the observations that I've made through the process. They're all very important considerations. Anything you can do to increase BSA, I certainly encourage, but we also need to recognize these other points also. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Thanks for joining us this morning, too, for your work over on the House. Okay, Sammy Crawford, then we'll circle back up to Fairbanks if they're online. We have Fairbanks back? Okay. Ms. Crawford in Kenai, please, your testimony.
Mr. Chair, this is the Kenai moderator. Due to a time constraint, Margaret Gilman would like to speak before Sammy Crawford, and she's prepared.
Yes, go ahead, please, Margaret.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Gilman, a school board member from Kenai and a mother of four children in the school district. And I have to say, when I heard the term wish list, in terms of what districts we're wishing for, I have to tell you that I do take offense to that because I am not asking for a wish list. I'm asking for teachers to be hired so that my fourth grader does not have to go to school with 31 other students each and every day. The Kenai School District asked for a base student allocation of $5,200, which was higher than some of the other districts. The reason for that is that we are not being funded equitably according to the area cost study. As a board member, I have had the opportunity many times to travel to Juneau to lobby on behalf of needs of the students. Without exception, a priority during each of these trips was to explain to the legislators about the inequitable funding which is provided to our district. Each time, I was told to please be patient and wait for the latest area cost study to be completed. Well, the latest cost study, there are reports dating back to 1984, which all demonstrate our district deserves more money, and all of them have been shelved. The latest study has been completed, and at this time, patience is over. While the clock has been running in Juneau waiting for another study, the students of the Kenai Peninsula have been losing ground rapidly. The question is not what would our district do with an additional $10 million, it's what opportunities have our students not had because our district has been so underfunded for the last 20 years. The missed opportunities fall into the categories of instruction, exploration, and care. Instructionally, our overloaded elementary classrooms make individualized learning difficult, if not impossible. Instead of a rich secondary curriculum full of opportunities, our course offerings have focused only on those courses required for graduation. Peninsula students have missed out on the amazing exploratory experience a full vocational program would offer. Our school libraries have been completely dismantled, with very few schools having a certified librarian to excite children with the love of books. Our principals are now teacher principals and regional administrators, so discipline problems must wait because the principals are otherwise occupied. The school nurses are so short-staffed that the overworked secretaries are filling in. I know that time is short, but I implore you as a parent and an Alaskan, please fund the area cost study, which will provide equitable education for all of Alaska students. In addition, please fund a base student allocation, which provides adequacy to all Alaska students.
Thank you, Ms. Gilman, for joining us this morning, your testimony and for your service on the school board there in Kenai. Let's circle back up to Fairbanks. We think we have Fairbanks back online. And Patty Pisha, we cut you off. If you would please complete your testimony, and then we'll go to Ms. Hall.
Thank you, Senator Wilkins. I just have one last comment, and it ties into an earlier testimony. Alaska's resource rich and it's strategically located. Those two distinctions attract to our state very advanced technology, give our students the opportunity to compete for those jobs created by those companies bringing this technology to Alaska. Do not offer them an adequate education, offer them an excellent education. Please continue to explore funding options to develop our greatest resource, which is our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Patty, for joining us this morning. Let's stay in Fairbanks and welcome Sue Hall to the microphone. Good morning, Sue. Your testimony, please.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. I'll try and be brief. The governor took the first step in getting us to adequacy in school funding. The House took the second step, and we're asking the Senate to take the third step of at least $4,995 per student, and also to consider committing to the trend line that Carl Rose of AASB presented earlier in this meeting, so that we can begin to get on a footing to get back to where we need to be. I'd like to give you just three very brief examples of things that have impacted student learning because of the cuts that have been made in previous years, and the things that we need to do in the future to educate kids to be successful. Our math books were postponed for purchase a few years ago. Fairbanks Math in terms of rankings in the state, we're first in reading, first in writing, but third in math, and I believe that relates to the fact that we haven't had the textbooks to go with our curriculum, though some PTAs and individual teachers have stepped up and purchased those. Another example is class size. We have at North Pole High School and Lathrop High School over 30 core content classes, not choir and PE where you would expect to have large class size, but over 30 core content classes with over 30 students in them. And finally, our dropout issue that we really need to address has been postponed for some years, though we have approximately 400 students leaving our schools each year without requesting a transcript to another school, and we haven't dealt with that issue because of budget constraints. I believe that this state has the resources to do the things that we need to do. I understood the representative's concerns about all of the challenges that legislators face in funding, from capital to operating to the post question, et cetera, and those are all challenges you face. But our state is in an enviable position in terms of options. Other states would love to have available to them some of the options that are currently before you in bill form for consideration in terms of utilizing the dollars. And so I encourage you to, again, take the first step and give a school at least $4,995 per student and consider establishing a trend line that will get us back to where we can do the right things for kids and help them succeed. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue, for your testimony this morning, for joining us there in Fairbanks. Let's go to Kodiak, and Norm Wooten is with us, and Dave Jones. Let's start with Norm. Good morning, Norm. Your testimony, please, and please limit it to 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. I am Norm Wooten, for the record, representing Kodiak Island Borough School District Board of Education. I thank you and the committee members for your commitment and support for education. Committee substitute for HB1 currently has 49.19 for the base student allocation. Kodiak Island Borough School District has calculated that for us to maintain our current level of support for our programs, we need a minimum base student allocation of $49.95. That's no new programs, that's just to maintain current programs. We have passed a resolution in support of $49.95 for a base student allocation. I might also add, for the committee's benefit, that the Kodiak Island Borough is contributing locally at the cap right now. I offer an open invitation to you for any of the committee members to visit Kodiak Schools at any time you can fit that in your schedule and just see for yourself how we're spending the money that you provide to us. Again, to be brief, again, I ask that you seriously consider increasing the base student allocation to $49.95. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
And Norm, thanks for joining us this morning and for your service there, longtime service on the school board in Kodiak. Dave Jones, good morning. Dave, your testimony, please.
Good morning, Senator. Thanks for allowing us this opportunity to testify. And again, first thing I'd like to say is I'd like to thank you for the funding that you gave us last year. As a school district, we were able to concentrate on teaching kids and not have teachers worrying about jobs and those things. And again, we thank you for the work you're doing this year. I've testified before, and I think what you know, I'm the director of finance for the school district, so I'm supposed to be the guy that provides the numbers and shows you that what we're asking for is justified, and I have whole details of lists on that if you want, but you know, the biggest things we're getting hit by are fuel and health insurance and those things. The item I wanted to address, though, as I keep hearing people say there's lots of numbers and it's confusing, and in Kodiak, it's confusing for us, too, because people say to us, well, what number do you need? Well, when you look at it, we're at the cap right now, and with the current legislation that's pending, the cap would increase approximately $500,000 in Kodiak. So we are also at this time going to our borough and saying, look, we want you to increase, keep us at the cap and increase us to $500 million. But we're hearing back at $500,000, I'm sorry. What we're hearing back from them is, well, we want to do that, but we're sure we can do that with the lots of municipal revenue sharing. And so the reason that we're asking for the money and the increase to $49.95, that would basically keep us even programmatically for this year, and at the same time we're going to our borough and asking them to take us that additional $500,000 to the cap. And so that's when you guys are talking numbers, that's where we're looking at numbers, and I want to thank you for your time today.
But Dave, thanks for being there this morning and for your help. Let's go to Homer, and we have Katie Gavenis and Jenny Espenshade. So let's start with Katie, and also in the room we have Pete Swanson. Pete's still here from Homer?
Oh,
okay. Good morning, Katie. If you would, please, your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Katie Gavenis, and I'm a senior at Homer High School. I would like to thank you for your consideration regarding education funding and also for this opportunity to express my concerns and hopes regarding education funding. I would, however, like to point out the irony, as Lori mentioned, of having this meeting during the school day when those most directly affected by this can't really be here to talk to you. I do need to get back to school for English, so I will try to keep my testimony brief, and I will also try to stay within deference to the time limit. I have attended Homer Public Schools for 12 years, during which I've been blessed by having many amazing teachers and staff working with me. However, budget cuts have drastically affected the education available to me and my fellow students on the Kenai Peninsula. I can't help but imagine what Homer High School would be like without the cuts that have been made during my 4 years there, what it would be like with adequate funding for education. I imagine advanced science classes where students don't have to sit at the back of the room in chairs rather than at a laboratory table. I imagine a full-time nurse in the building. I imagine a full-time Spanish teacher so that students have reasonable opportunities to meet college requirements regarding foreign language and also become fluent in a language. I imagine not having to wait sometimes an hour to talk to the 1.5 counselors about pressing issues like colleges, class registration, scholarship, and personal problems. I imagine a photography class and a culinary arts class so that students can actually choose their electives because they are interested in them, rather than to fulfill a graduation requirement. I imagine more custodians, so if your locker gets jammed in the morning, you don't have to wait until the afternoon for it to be opened, and so that paper towels and soap are not almost always out in the bathroom. I imagine sports teams that can spend more time playing and practicing than fundraising to travel to all region games. I imagine a school that provides its students with the basics necessary for a quality, well-rounded education. Then reality comes rushing back. These basic needs have not been met, even though the borough funds them 100% to the maximum local contribution. I feel cheated. I feel swindled. I feel robbed of the opportunities of a quality, well-rounded education. But I am a senior, so it's too late for me. Whatever the legislature does now can't restore what has been denied to me. I am here, though, because you can take steps to prevent other students from being cheated further. Like me, my fellow students at Homer High and the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District and in the state have been cheated. You have the opportunity and responsibility to stop this. All that we ask for is adequate and equitable funding for education. A simple request, I think, not a wish list. It is your responsibility to ensure that it happens. I thank you in advance for doing your job and doing the right thing. Thank you for your time. Now I'm going to go to English class.
Thank you, Katie, for joining us this morning. Are you going on to college?
Yes.
And you're probably going to UAF, I would guess?
No, I'm not going to UAF. I'm going to the East.
That was a political statement, I'm sorry. Katie, thanks for joining us this morning for your heartfelt testimony. We appreciate hearing from the from the students, and we hope it was as beneficial as being in school this morning. So thanks, Katie. Let's go to Jenny Espenshade. Jenny, morning, still in Homer.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time, and I hope your consideration. As a parent of 2 Alaska high school students, I urge you to fund education adequately by raising the base student allocation. As a parent from the Kenai Peninsula, I demand that you do so equitably. Now that the recent cost study provides you with empirical evidence that our district and others have been consistently and seriously shortchanged year after year, it is your duty to begin mitigating that harm this year. Now, today, even if you phase in these corrections, it is imperative that you begin to change the system. You can begin that mitigation by 1, raising the base student allocation, and 2, phasing in changes to the cost differential. If your sense of fairness is not strong enough to withstand the pressures of political expedience, I urge you to look at the Alaska Constitution for support in doing the right thing. Article 1, Section 1 states that the Constitution is dedicated to the principle that all persons are equal and entitled to equal rights, opportunities, and protection under the law. Article 7, Section 1 mandates that you, the legislature, establish and maintain a system of public schools open to all children of the state. The Alaska Supreme Court in a 1997 decision interpreted those clauses as establishing an equal protection case or claim for Alaskan students' right to equal educational opportunity. Who's going to be the next Molly Hooch in this state? And it's a sad day if that is what it will take to adequately and equitably fund education in this state. I appreciate your concerns about local contributions. Please consider that our district is one of only 4 that makes the maximum local contribution. Yet our district, the Kenai Peninsula School District, is the one most shortchanged by your cost differential system. Can you justify that to me?
and the students of the Kenai Peninsula. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny, for joining us this morning and for your testimony. We'll come back to Homer and pick up Ms. Germano here just shortly, but let's go move forward to Seward, and we have folks in Seward. Let's start first as we take two from each LRO site. Rick Smirilli, Rick, will be to you in just a moment, and then Sandy Wesley. So, Rick, morning. If you would introduce yourself and whom you represent and your testimony, please.
Good morning, Chairman Wilkin. My name is Rick Smirillo, and I am from Moose Pass. I'm on the Site-Based Management Council there, but I'm speaking strictly for myself. I'm a 50-year-old worried non-parent, a non-parent who's been observing education in the state for a few years, and I'm worried that the quality of education has just been declining. As a local example, I'll point out to you that in Moose Pass, civic groups just recently have had to come up with $3,000 to pay for math books and computer software, and certainly I don't regard those as extras. And I really do believe that education funding should be nonpartisan, and it is, and you really should be talking about a bigger pie. We shouldn't be squabbling over whether the Kenai Peninsula costs more per pupil than Anchorage or more or less than the Bush. I think we should be talking about increasing generally the quality of education statewide, but what happens when you have a shrinking pie is that we do get into these non-productive squabbles about who's up to the cap and cost differentials, but I don't think you should be talking about that, and I don't really believe that a 7% increase is an increase because we are playing catch-up for decades of decline. Moose Pass has gone from 3 teachers to 2 that I've noticed in the last few years, and the number of pupils has increased or stayed the same, and as you know, not all the dollars go to the classroom, but it seems to me that at $50 a barrel oil, a $5,200 BSA really is feasible. We really could be talking about a larger pie. So to conclude, I'll just say that public money is always tight, you know that, and there are always competing priorities, but I believe that public education should be a higher priority, even if it means cutting something else that's very important. And I'm just worried that you're contemplating funding public education in the state and in my town of Moose Pass at less than the minimum, and that worries me greatly. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Rick. My apologies for stumbling over your name. Yeah, thanks for joining us this morning. Still in Seward, Sandy Wesley. Good morning, Sandy. Your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you. My name is Sandy Wesley. I am Vice President of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I have submitted written comments, so I'll just highlight a couple of things here. I do want to say I appreciate the attention this body is giving to equitable, adequate, and early funding for education, and ideally it should be in that order. The inequitable area cost differential for our district over the years has led to serious inadequacy of funding, as you have heard. The base student allocation of $4,919 proposed in House Bill 1 is helpful. It does not, however, allow us to adequately provide the programs we need to meet increasing mandates from you folks, and an increasing achievement gap. Just one for instance, we have too few teachers and classes to provide full-day programming at Seward Middle School and most district high schools. The number of home releases at the junior and senior grade levels is increasing. We are reducing academic and technical education offerings to the point where some students are having difficulty planning out the courses they need to graduate. And we are also reducing, by these home releases, the level of adult supervision our youth deserve. I urge you to support House Bill 1 and add to the base student allocation. Our board has passed a resolution stating we need a total of $5,200 per student based on the current area cost differential. We are very heartened by the findings of the recent Alaska School District cost update by ICER. It does take into account the operating cost of rural areas. The Kenai Peninsula is mostly rural. And by the way, if you accept the invitation to go to Kodiak, we extend the invitation to visit us here on the Kenai Peninsula. Monday night, our board passed another resolution in support of the Erikoff study, and asking for legislation that bases in the recommendation, but not at the price of adequacy of funds for all districts. In closing, I would urge you to consider K-12 funding, not as a state cost, but as a wise investment. We have a number of wonderful opportunities coming down the pike very soon in terms of the gas pipeline, in terms of mining, and our students that could be working in those related fields and directly in those fields are in the pipe, they're in the school system now. We need to prepare them for those jobs. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy, for your testimony this morning and for your service on the school board. We appreciate it. Let's circle back to Kenai and pick up Sammy Crawford. Then we're going to come back to the hearing room in Juneau. We have some folks that have traveled from outside of Juneau to visit with us. But let's do Sammy Crawford. Sammy in Kenai, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Sammy Crawford, president of the school board in Kenai for the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I would like to thank you for your efforts for early funding and your funding starting at $49.19, but for us, it just isn't adequate. This funding level means that we need to increase class sizes again, we'll need to cut teachers and staff, we've cut our vocational, we've cut arts and music, we've gone to part-time administrators. Buildings are empty someday of administrators. We have cut librarians, we have cut counselors and nurses and gifted teachers. They're only part-time in many of our buildings. The base student allocation means that we probably will have to cut curriculum materials, including textbooks. This area cost differential could really help us. Our local borough has funded to the cap consistently over the years. And we've already cut co-curricular. We don't pay any travel. That all is fundraised by the kids and their coaches. We only pay stipends. We've done everything we can. And what we find is that people are leaving the district and they are feeling helpless and hopeless about the quality of our schools. So we urge you to look at the area cost differential. It vindicates us. It says that $10 million that we have been cut over the years that could really, really help us. Anything you can do to increase the student-based allocation would really help us. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Sammy, and thanks for staying with us this morning there in Kenai and for your service on the school board. Let's come back to the hearing room here. We have some people that have traveled from outside Juneau to visit with us. And then I see that we've been joined by Heather Lindquist as an off-net site. Heather, good morning. We'll get to you here just as soon as we can. And then we'll go back to Homer and pick up visit with Deb Germano. But let's come back to Juneau. Pete Swanson, Pete, are you still with us?
Yes.
Are you? Okay. Pete's from Homer. Why don't you join us, if you would. And then at the microphone, if we could ask Leslie Campbell to join us. Leslie, if you'd come up and sit next to Pete, we'll take a couple of people here in Juneau. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Your testimony, and if you would limit it to 3 minutes, please.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I was here earlier when you started, and something that Senator Bundy said struck me. He asked a specific...
I'm sorry, did he introduce himself? Or would you just identify yourself for the
Pink
record?
Pink Swanson, your representative. From Homer.
Okay, thanks, Pete.
What Senator Bundy said was, how are these dollars going to go back to the kids? And I think that any number of us that are principals or teachers could answer that question. We have plans, actually, of how those dollars would go back. I just want to share with you, people have told me I need to tell the story. I've been 7 years in the state as an administrator. I started in Sitka. Every year I've watched cuts in those 7 years. I wrote programs and service to students. Came to McNeil 5 years ago, After my first year there, we cut two positions from a staff of seven. That's a big hit, and it wasn't all due to lack of enrollment. The thing that I've watched that staff do, though, is that they've continued to do with less. And just in the last 2 years, we, as a site, were chosen this year for the 2004 National Blue Ribbon School. There were two other schools in the state that received that honor. There's 15 in the entire state for the entire time that that program's been in place. I think we've been doing a pretty good job. But one of the things that I shared with my school board on Monday night was, I don't know that now that I could continue to provide the same kind of results that resulted in us being given that award that I did 5 years ago when I came into that job. Just the last 2 years, some of the things that you've heard some of our board members talk about, I've been a regional principal of another site. I've been one of those principals that's been off-site for part of the time during the week, going to another school. I've also this year been a principal who has teaching assignments. I teach PE and music half of the day. Those are things that have to be done because the cuts that have been made. But I think that if we were able to put the base funding back to where it should be, that we could provide the kind of programs that we need to provide for students in this state. The programs that I thought I was coming to from a state that has experienced the highs and lows of the state of California is back in that same cycle. I'd like to be able to provide for my own children and the children of the state the best that they can have. Thank you.
Thanks, Pete, for your testimony and for traveling from over to be with us this morning. Let's see. Good morning. Nice
good morning.
To have you at Finance.
My name is Leslie Campbell, and I'm the principal of Annual Elementary in Fairbanks, Alaska. I am also the president-elect of the Fairbanks Principals Association. I've been an educator in Alaska for 28 years and have been involved in many of the ebbs and flows of cuts in programs and the whole question of funding. And Sue Hull just did a wonderful job of outlining what the Fairbanks District is looking at this year. I guess one of the things I haven't come to grips with in terms of our whole funding process is sustainability. And the fact that we are not looking at more long-term, long-range planning in terms of how to fund adequately the different school districts in the state. And hearing all of the testimony today, I see there's great disparity of need. And so it's really interesting to me. I run a school that has about 414 kids, and it's a Title I school. The first year I was a principal, there were 19 different languages spoken in that building. We are meeting the guidelines of No Child Left Behind, and I have to say courageously, we have been able to make adequate yearly progress for the past 2 years. In the process of that, we have done it with less. I am right now focusing, based on our collaborative team planning in the building, on math. Math is our focus this year. And as Sue talked to you about, our textbooks were cut, and they're falling apart. And so I was able to access soft money because I had to, because that was an area of need in my building, or we'd be put into year one not meeting adequate yearly progress. 25% of my population is special education. We have a high population of students that have limited English proficiency. Excellence is what we are about. I have a terrific staff. Keeping them is my concern. Making sure I don't have 29 to 33 students in a kindergarten is my concern. And so I've never been here before. This is the first experience for me. It's kind of a new experience. It just seems strange to me when you are running a corporation that you don't go into a long-range, long-term project of planning. And so that's your challenge, is maintaining that sustainability. I applaud the efforts of the House in terms of the $4,919. It's not sufficient. The district just told you that. Other districts are telling you it's not sufficient. I haven't heard one person today say that it was sufficient. So that's your challenge. And it's our challenge to support the classroom and to make sure that we are accountable for creating adults that can be productive members of our society. And let me tell you something, we're doing it, and we're doing a darn good job. So thank you.
Great. Thanks. Thank you, Leslie, for being here this morning. And Senator Bundy and Senator Stidman, you'd like to know that Leslie is the principal of the name of the school that Leslie is the principal of was my kindergarten teacher. How about that? It's a small world. Told that Senator Bundy one time, he says, I don't think he went to kindergarten. So, you were too big. So, okay, let's see. We're going to go back out in the teleconference network and go back to Homer. Folks, there's some chairs up here in the front if you'd like to sit down. Ma'am? Let's go back to Homer and talk with Jeb Germano, and then we'll go on over to Seward and talk with the Chases in Seward. So, morning, Deb. Are you still with us?
I certainly am. Thank you. My name is Deb Germano. I'm here speaking today, and I really want to make this clear, because I'm here speaking today as an individual, as a parent, as a member of my community. I am on the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Board of Education. But I just really want to make it clear that I'm here speaking for myself. A lot of people probably irritated me when I'm done. But when I look at HB1, I certainly agree that it doesn't cover the adequacy issue. But as a person that's I'm really proud to live here on the Kenai and have watched all these years the support that the borough has given to the school district here in this community, and I've been so frustrated looking across the state with a lack of local support from people that can support themselves and people that don't give support to themselves. But we have waited here in the Kenai for that something to change, that something is the cost differential. It's evident, no matter how you look at it, that this microcosm that the Kenai is of the state has all the issues that everyone around the state has, the rural schools, the small buildings, the incredible distances, getting fuel and food to buildings. And I understand everybody, so we understand well the concerns around this state. When I look at the base allocation, I'm sorry, back to that, I would prefer House Bill 1 to stay just like it is and ask you folks to really take a look and do something on the area cost differential. There is something for everybody in the area cost differential. People's costs have increased. And I would really urge you to take a look at that and begin implementation. We have been told for years, just wait till the cost study comes. And we have also been told, wait until Anchorage is hurting and then the issue will be addressed. Well, folks, we're hearing that everybody's hurting finally. And you know what that means for us is we're just bleeding. And we need to have this issue addressed for the benefit of the children of this state. There is no reason why a child in the Kenai Peninsula is funded at a lesser level than children in the Mapsu Valley. It doesn't make sense. And it's really time to address this issue. And I would appreciate it if you folks would.
Thank you, Deb, for joining us this morning there in Homer. Let's move on to Seward and speak with the Chases. Karen and Dwayne, are you with us there in Seward?
They had to leave. There is no one else in Seward. Thank you.
Okay, so done with Seward. Thanks for your help there, LIO. Done with Homer. Let's go to an off-net and say good morning to Heather Lindquist. Heather, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Your testimony, please.
Good morning. Thank you to Chairman Wilkins and to the members of the committee for giving me the opportunity to speak today.
My name is Heather Lindquist, and I'm from Moose Pass on the Kenai Peninsula, and I'm speaking for myself as a community member. As a stay-at-home mother of a young son, I'm frustrated and angered by the deterioration of our school system over the last decade, and as a former teacher, I have witnessed this deterioration firsthand. When I began teaching in Moose Pass in 1996, we had 33 students in our K-8 school, and there were three full-time teachers in the three classrooms. One of those teachers was our building administrator. We had a full-time building administrator. We had our own principal, as did the nearby towns of Hope and Cooper Landing. Now, all three schools share one building administrator, one principal between the three schools. They each see him one day a week, and the other 2 days of the week, he's sent to work at the school district's central office. So we went from having a building administrator and three teachers to now at Moose Pass, there are two teachers teaching more students than we did, pushing 40 children here at school. And the primary class is not a K-1, a kindergarten first grade class. It's a kindergarten through fourth grade class. And that is absolutely ridiculous. We've got kids in there who do not know how to write their names or tie their shoes, with kids that are on a fourth or maybe even a sixth grade reading level. And it's absolutely ridiculous. Next year, the situation is only going to get worse. The school is slated for only 1.5 teachers. And as a volunteer in the school and as someone who has been there, I don't see how it can even be done. Moose Pass students then go on to high school in Seward, and Seward High School has had to cut their entire music and drama programs in the last couple of years, and they've only survived with the help of the local community stepping up and offering music and drama. And there are virtually no advanced placement courses and not enough challenging course offerings for the students in Seward. And, we are the wealthiest country in the world and the wealthiest state in the country. And there's no excuse for not giving our children the very best education possible. A legislator was quoted in the paper last week as saying, our schools are pretty good. Well, I'm sorry, that's not good enough. They deserve the best education possible. They are our most priceless commodity, and investing in their education will come back to us tenfold in the future. Not investing in them will come back to haunt us. And it's curious that it costs, we spend about $60,000 a year to house a prisoner. Why can't we spend $5,200 a year on a student? So it seems to me that if we're going to spend $38 million on the PERS and TERS issue, that maybe we could add $38 million to the $70 million increase and bring it up to $108 million, and that probably would solve everybody's problem. Thank you for your time.
You bet, Heather. Thanks for joining us. Where are you calling from this morning?
Moose Pass.
Moose Pass. Okay. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else on the teleconference network that I've missed? Okay, if someone joins us, I'm sure they'll let us know. So let's come back to the hearing room. And there's some folks that have traveled from out of Juneau to be with us. But before we go to those folks, I'd like to ask Mike Ford to come forward and Mary Hakala. Those two would come forward and provide their testimony, please. Morning, Mike.
Morning.
Let's start with Mary, if we could. Morning, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you, Senator.
I know you got a lot to say, but if you'll keep us to 3 minutes, we'd sure appreciate it.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Mary Hakala. I'm representing myself, my three children in the public school system here in Juneau, and I'm coordinator of Alaska Kids Count. We are a nonpartisan network, volunteer, parents working for improvements in Alaska's public schools. We were created last year in reaction to the looming, devastating cuts, and we appreciated your support to prevent them last year. I'd like to focus for just a moment on one issue of great importance to parents, and you've heard it from across the state. Class size. Why, as a parent, do I care about class size? I care because I want my children, I want their classmates, to get the help they need when they need it. I want my child, I want their classmates to be challenged. I'd like to share a testimony, which I think you've just received, from a teacher at Juneau Douglas High School who cannot be here because she is teaching and grading papers. I ask you to look at the magnitude of the job before her. She also is a teacher who has 38 students in her senior English class. She has seats for 31. Kids sit on the floor. They sit in the hall. Some kids probably skip. Enclosed in the packet are two student essays which are representative of one assignment. I ask you to look at them, read them, time yourself, multiply that by 99. She has 99 juniors. This is one assignment. Also in the packet is the rubric or guide by which she evaluates each student paper. Again, look at them, take a few moments, time yourself, multiply. Class size matters. We urge you, we've submitted a proposal to you and to all legislators, to increase the base student allocation to 5120. Why? We want improvements in our children's classrooms. We are parents, we are volunteers in the schools, we are fundraisers. We want improvements. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mary, and I'd say this to you, and I, no matter where you stand on this issue, all of us in the legislature and us parents and just citizens appreciate good volunteer effort, and you and Mike and others have done a wonderful job at Alaska Kids Count, and we appreciate that very much. You've done a heck of a job. So let's go to Mike. Mike, come on.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Mike Ford, and I am also a member of Alaska Kids Count. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I think you've heard our proposal for a base student allocation of $5,120. Why do we need to do that? We are at the opposite end of the process that you are. You see the total budget picture, you see the student operating budget, you see the part that goes for education. We are at the opposite end in that we are in the classroom. We see what goes on with the teachers, with the students. We see them working to satisfy the educational needs of the state with the resources they have. And we believe those resources are not adequate. A recent study of all the 50 states in terms of educational funding and support ranked Alaska 30th out of 50. Now, if we were to assign grades, I think our educational, our support for public education would probably get a C minus. What we'd like to see is that grade improved. We'd like to see at least a B or at least a C plus. And that's going to require additional funding for our schools. Our classroom improvements are our goal. Now, we understand we have TERS and PERS problems. We understand that there are inflation requirements. We're trying to get beyond that. We're trying to get money to the kids in the classroom. That's our goal. And we believe that has certain benefits to the state. We believe that our public school system is really an economic lock for the state. If we have students who get the resources they need, to get the skills they need, go forward and either get higher education or go out and join the workforce, that is a benefit to the state that's immeasurable. And we love to talk about dividends in Alaska, but really the public school system pays dividends far beyond the permanent fund. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for your testimony and, again, for your volunteer efforts. You guys have just been great. Let's stay in the room and let's go to the folks that have traveled. Is PJ Ford Slack still with us? PJ, I see her. And followed by Erica Clude Painter. Erica, are you still with us? Okay, if you two ladies would come forward. Morning, PJ.
Morning.
Nice to have you in Juneau. If you would, please.
Good morning, Senator Wilkin, Senator Bundy and Senator Stedman and the rest of the committee. My name is PJ Ford Slack. I'm the principal of North Pole High School, the third largest high school in the Fairbanks School District, and I might say probably one of the last comprehensive high schools in our district. When I say a comprehensive high school, I mean we try to offer everything from the basic classes to vocational programs in-house to AP classes. And the cuts have been severe. Last year it was a magnificent effort by everyone here in Juneau to make sure that the cuts were not worse than they were. But I am a high school that did have cuts, and yet I had an increase in student enrollment. I lost an assistant principal, an activities director, and four teachers. As you already heard from the testimony of our board member, Hall, North Pole High School has one of the largest class sizes in the Fairbanks School District. I have a Spanish class with 40 students, and my Spanish teacher teaches three levels of Spanish in that high school class. I have English class, an 11th grade English class that has 38, and that's not 38 one period, that's 38 six periods. So when you look at that class load and you multiply it by course subjects, it is an exhausted staff that I'm looking at this time of the year. And it is with some trepidation that I await for this financial bill to get through, because I'm always worried about an email or a phone call from the central office telling me that someone else may be missing for next year. North Pole High School, I believe, is a population of students that not only will go to UAF and UAA and UAS and many other schools, but they are also the students who take welding and metals and small engines and are the future of the next pipeline in this state, as well as mining, as well as other resources. The students are proud, and they come from a proud community, and a very large community that serves two military bases, as well as all the way out the Chena Hot Springs Road. We are a high school of 900 students, and we're growing. And I want to be able to say to them that when that school started in 1984, in the building that it's in, that it will still provide the same education with the passion and enthusiasm that you've already seen from my colleague, Leslie Campbell, that the students in elementary school will not lose that when they get to North Pole High School, because they will still have the wide range of activities offered to them and the opportunities to keep them here in the state of Alaska. Thank you to the House for sending this forward. Thank you, gentlemen, for seeing this before March the 15th, and I hope and wish you Godspeed on getting this through quickly.
Thanks, BJ, for being here, and thanks. You're an asset to our district, I know that. And I'm surprised you didn't mention that it was North Pole High School state champion football team.
That's correct. It's a nice trophy.
Yes, it is, and well-deserved. Erica, good morning. Erica from Petersburg. If you would introduce yourself, and then we're going to go to, is Lisa Prince-Smith with us? Lisa, why don't you join us at the table, if you would. Morning, Erica.
Good morning. My name is Erica Klute-Painter, and I am the principal at Stedman Elementary School in Petersburg. And so I could probably do you one better on the naming game. It's, just discovered that that is Senator Stedman's aunt. So.
Well. Yes. Is that good or bad?
I think it's great. Just thought I'd mention that. Petersburg City School District, we would like to thank you for your continued support and concern for education in Alaska. Our district serves the city of Petersburg and the residents of Mitkoff Island. We offer a complete preschool through 12th grade program based on a standards curriculum, and we serve approximately 630 students. Our schools meet adequate yearly progress in accordance with NCLB and actually beyond that, on the district level and in each of our three buildings. We are very proud of the programs that we do offer for our children. We are concerned, however, that the years of flat funding have eroded our programs, and we feel that we're in a crisis right now. What we would like to see, our concerns for 2005, 2006, and beyond, we would like to see the development of a long-term stable fiscal plan for funding education in the state. We are concerned about the fixed costs that continue to rise out of control, insurance and fuel, retirement costs, maintenance costs. We would like to see a plan to address those rising costs so that we can maintain current programs and level of service. With the proposed funding of $49.19 per pupil, we will be going into our reserves at least $300,000, and we will still be short $84,000 to maintain the programs that we feel are vital for our students. I guess I'll step back now and just speak for my own particular building, and I don't have a huge story like these huge high schools and whatever, but I think it's important to tell the stories of the small schools and the small districts as well. In our district over the last few years, we have cut our library program. It is now closed half the day or staffed by volunteers. We have cut our TAG program completely. We do not offer anything above and beyond in our elementary school other than what happens in our classrooms. We are looking at cutting our counselor this year. as well, which I have huge concerns about that with the needs of the students as they come into our schools now. They are changing and they are growing year after year. As somebody else mentioned, the needs of special ed students as well. Those continue to be a challenge for us. I have been in Petersburg for 4 years, and I am also a parent, so I do have concerns for future programs for my children entering school, and I do have a child entering kindergarten next year. So I didn't, you know, just move to Petersburg for the job. I'm there as a community member, as a parent, and I have grave concerns about our future there. So I do also second that support for wishing you Godspeed and making a decision for us. So thank you.
Thanks, Erica, for joining us this morning. Senator Bundy?
Yeah. You mentioned, thank you, Mr. Chairman, you mentioned long-term plan. I'd invite your attention to Senator Wilkins, SB 88.
Okay.
It all depends on how you define long-term. Too many Alaskans define it between now and their next dividend check. But this would bridge our spending problems for 15, 20 years. So I invite your attention to it.
I appreciate that.
Senator Stedman, what is the lineage? Well, is that a part of your family, Stedman Elementary?
Yes. So actually, my uncle Bill's, or actually he's technically, I guess, my second cousin. My dad went to school with him, with their family, because he didn't have any parents. Mm-hmm. So we lived there with him. But the family's been in Petersburg since the late teens, early 20s.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Learn something every day. Thanks, Erica, for joining us. Lisa, good morning. We're going to have you followed by Sheila Judd Hall, still with us? How about Leslie Vandergarten? Leslie with us? How about Ruth Michalshek? Okay. Let's start with Lisa Prince-Smith. Good morning, Lisa. Your testimony, please.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Lisa Prince-Smith. I am the principal at Wonder Park Elementary School in Anchorage. It's a Title I school. In South Mountain View, we have a very high percentage, up to almost 70% of students getting free and reduced lunch. And our school district in Anchorage did not pay for us to come here. So I wanted to just say that off the bat. As a principal representing 400 odd students and a parent myself with students going to the public schools in Anchorage, I want to speak about the funding. As it stands right now, Anchorage will need more than the $49.19 to cut even where we're at. We appreciate that there has been an increase in funding, but we need to go a little bit further. As a Title I school, we have seen tremendous decreases in our school. I will give you an idea of one second grade classroom. We have right now in 21 students, 6 are biracial, 5 Asian, 4 Alaska Native, 3 black students, 2 Hispanic, 1 white student. Within this classroom, 9 do not speak English, 4 are in special education services. The teacher of this classroom, Kelly Shanazy, is a mentor teacher within our district. Other teachers come to her to get trained. She's a fabulous, outstanding professional, and she came to me this fall and said, I need some help. I've got almost half of my class doesn't speak English, and what can you do to support me here? We are going to be faced with further problems such as this because the Wat refugee camp in Thailand is getting resettled. A large population of these students are going to be arriving and going to schools in South Mountain View, such as Wonder Park. As in speaking for Title I principals, they have all asked me, there's about 12 of them in Anchorage, to really look for an increase in funding, especially for our students who do not speak English. With the No Child Left Behind, we're held accountable to make sure these students move forward. And they're arriving by the droves, unable to speak English, and we're continuously losing money. This year we've lost $70,000, and that definitely goes into services. In talking about how the money is going back to kids, looking at overall Title I funding, which is set by federal mandate, we've lost 13% of money that went directly into schools just over the last 3 years. Only 60% right now goes directly to schools, 20% is going into school improvement, 5% for highly qualified status, 10% professional development, and 5% admin. This is set by the federal government, so it's nothing that we can do. So continuously we're losing money as we increase at a rapid rate the diversity of our population. So we would really appreciate an increase in that funding. And thank you.
Thank you, Lisa, for being with us this morning.
And if you can stand one more small world, Alaska. The first year that Wonder Park existed, my wife taught the kindergarten in the basement of a Catholic church.
All comes around, doesn't it? Thanks, Lisa, for joining us this morning. And welcome you, Ms. Hall.
Yes.
Good morning, Sheila. Thanks for being with us this morning. We've got Senator Stevens slipped me a note, said we can give us a little extra time, but we have to start at 11:30, so we need to be out of here at 11:20. And if we stay within about 2 or 3 minutes, we're going to make it. So, Sheila, good morning. Your testimony, please.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Judge Hall, the principal at Campbell Elementary School. We are not a Title I school, but we're starting to find, I call it a Title I type school because of the needs in our community at this time. Because of past FTE cuts at our school, I now have a school that, although we did make AYP this year, I am very proud of our staff who worked very hard. We are now standing with classes in 4th through 6th grade that are at 29 and 30. The teachers are still striving hard to do ongoing assessment and to teach data-driven curriculum, but this also takes more of staff development and interventions for those students who are non-proficient. And this also is harder when you have 29 to 30 students to meet the needs of all the learners. Also, we have a high population of special ed students and are constantly asking for more support personnel to assist these students. One thing that our at Campbell really utilizes is the Safe and Drug-Free Schools money. We are starting to find that there's greater need for the anti-bullying curriculum and assets building in our school. And these are types of things that we've trained teachers to help teach this, but any further cuts with the size of the classes, actually not really cuts, if we're not able to add a teacher, the way that our classes are set up now, there is more need for the anti-bullying curriculum and the violence reduction type of things that we're having to add to our teacher load already. And so as we strive very hard to stay with our six-year plan and make sure that our teachers have the tools needed to provide the education needed for NCLB, we appreciate the increase, but also feel that an higher increase will be needed to maintain that. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheila, for being with us this morning. Senator Bundy, before you ask your question, I'm going to ask, is Leslie Vander gone?
Yes, I'm
going to
decline to testify.
Thank you, Leslie, for sticking with us this morning. And then go to Ruth Michalczyk.
Likewise.
Okay, thank you, Ruth. And then hang on, Senator Bundy. Barbara Naganskis? Okay. Senator Bundy.
Yeah, I was just wondering if this population in your school has increased or decreased this year.
It's constantly transit. I'm bounced back and forth from like 490 to 500. This year we have an increase of out-of-state students who have come in, which creates other challenges since they have not come up through our program trying to make sure that we again meet AYP.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks again, Sheila, for being with us. Morning, Barb from Anchorage.
Yes, good morning. My name is Barbara Nagengast. I'm president of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, and I'm also the principal at Spring Hill Elementary in Anchorage. Thank you, Chairman Wilkin and Senator Bundy and the other committee members. I want you to know how very hard the staff and students in Alaska schools are working in order to meet the performance standards. You have heard my colleagues talking about that already. We're working to meet the federal requirements of No Child Left Behind and IDEA. You've heard their stories about that as well. As elementary and secondary principals, we accept the responsibility for raising student achievement. We work very hard to make efficient and really effective use of the funding that we do have available and the other resources that we are able to muster in our schools. You expect that, and the parents in our communities expect that. They want what is very best for their most precious children that they send us every day. And we work very hard to meet those challenges. The parents and the principals want their children educated in a safe environment. That takes money to create that safe environment. It takes an attitude of what's best for kids. They want the individual needs of their children met. That requires smaller class size. I shudder to think about assigning a new child to third grade. He'll begin on Monday. That will make the 29th child in a third grade classroom. That's huge. These are children who are still learning to master that all-important skill of reading. And it's a huge issue, not just in my school, but in the schools where of the principals whom I represent here today. We have so much research now today about effective instruction in mathematics, in reading, and putting that research-based curriculum into our schools is very expensive. Keeping an adequate technology base so that things can be tracked in terms of data. We are in better shape now in terms of tracking our kids' progress and meeting their individual needs because of some of the technology, but we need to keep current on that, and that is so important, not only for administrative purposes, but more importantly to help deliver instruction to children. All of those things help children succeed academically, but the most important thing that we do is to put highly qualified, fine teachers in classrooms. That's where the rubber meets the road. As a principal, and I believe my colleagues would join me in saying that one of the most important things that we do is to hire and then to retain highly qualified staff. And that involves a commitment of finances as well.
If you could summarize,
okay,
please.
I will. I will tell you that 22 years ago, I enrolled my own child as a kindergartner on the Kenai Peninsula, where I was in awe of the program, having moved from a small Montana community. My two children are graduates of the Alaska school system. And I have to say that in the years that that happened, and in the years of declining revenues, things are not what they could and they should be for our Alaskan children. We need your support. We need your willingness to make the decisions that are made and to keep education as a priority in the process. We don't have a wish list. We have a reality of need. We can't afford to continue to cut teachers. We can't reduce the intervention programs that we need for our children. And without an increase to the monies that are available to us to educate kids, I'm afraid that the decline is only going to have long-term effects on the economy of this state. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you for being with us this morning, Barb, and for your leadership with the secondary principals.
Elementary principals. Okay, thank you.
Demoted you there. Okay. Thanks. Let's see. Folks from out of town, let's go. Is John Podost with us? John, come forward. How about Denise Green Wilkinson? Denise, you with us? Come forward, please. Then we'll circle back around and pick up the folks, our friends from Juneau. And let's see. I think
I have a school administrator.
Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. If you would, your testimony, and no more than 3 minutes less if you can do it.
I'm working on it. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is John Podest. I'm the principal of Skyview High School down on Soldotna on the Kenai, and I'm also the president-elect of the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals. I'll take over the presidency in October of that. So I'm kind of speaking on behalf of both. As the high school principal, we're the largest school in our district with 550 kids. As the president-elect, I represent 319 administrators from across the entire state of Alaska. And we'd like to start by thanking you for your efforts to take care of education funding early. It puts a huge crunch on districts. Obviously, that's why you're doing it, to try and push that off. I appreciate your efforts to try and get that out of the way early. We sincerely appreciate that. The House bill that's out there right now with 4,919 is a good start. However, it's not quite enough. In my 6 years as principal at Skyview High School, we've gone from 40 teachers down to 28 teachers. I've cut my home ec program, I've cut my voc ed, I've cut my music, I've cut my art, I've cut my counselors, my libraries. We're getting torn apart. Part of it is declining enrollment, but part of it is simply the funding is not keeping up with what we need to run our schools. My work across the state, and also as the president-elect, I've been doing a lot of work across the nation, and my that work has brought me to work with a lot of colleagues across the nation. I think I can honestly speak on all of our behalf and say not a single one of us is afraid of accountability. We will take the challenge of accountability, of being accountable for the money that we spend that you give us, being accountable for our test scores. We want that, but we also need the funding to do the things that we're accountable for. We've continued, and someone said it earlier, we've continued to do more and more in our schools with less and less. My analogy of that is the sustainability of that cannot continue. It's kind of like owning a car, and you run your car and you put enough money in it to get your gas so you can get from point A to point B, but you never change your oil, you never check your transmission fluid, you never grease it, you never do tune-ups, you never do anything. It's going to bring you for a while, but the sustainability of that car, eventually it's going to crash. I kind of see that's the way we are here now. We've not funded education where it needs to be. We're doing the best we can, but we've got rotten spark plugs, we've got oil that needs to be changed, and we need a little extra help to take care of that. I would encourage you to take a look at doing something with the funding. Like I said, 4919 is a good start. I would hope that we could go some more. I know on the Kenai, we need about 5,000 just to kind of break even where we are right now. From a district perspective, I would hope that you would consider the ICER.
Please wrap up, John.
Thank you very much for your time.
Perfect time. Thank you, sir. Denise, morning.
Good morning.
My
name is Denise Green Wilkinson, and I'm a principal in Anchorage of Polaris K-12 school. I'm also the state coordinator for the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, and also a co-chair on the National No Child Left Behind Task Force. And I would just go ahead and wrap it up in four pieces that I have in my conversations, mostly with colleagues throughout the state. These are colleagues from kindergarten through 12th grade principals. Basically, an increase with HB1 will simply hold us from going backwards. You've heard from my district, they came up with a figure of 5,120. Second big impact, class sizes will be impacted if it does not increase. And this is your primary classroom, this is your advanced placement biology classroom, this is your required U.S. government classroom. Thirdly is supplies and equipment are a big issue. I've been an educator in Alaska for 22 years, I've been a principal here for 14 years, and I tell you, every year I face the dilemma of what supplies, what equipment do I do without? And sometimes they're as simple as Xerox paper to how often will you continue to use the same math textbooks? We've got to maintain that status quo. And then fourthly is the requirements with No Child Left Behind. You should be proud of the fact of what these teachers and principals in Alaska have taken on in the area of professional development. Your people know how to disaggregate data. Your people are ready to go ahead and take on the standard-based assessments. But here's what we do. We go this far, we get the data, we disaggregate it, we get the information. Now we need to carry it forward into the classrooms, and we have to do that every single year if we truly believe what No Child Left Behind means, and that means look at every child as an individual. So professional development will be something that educators must never, ever let go of, and what that will take is continuous training and continuous deaggregating the data and implementing it into the classroom. So basically, those are the four issues that I've heard from across the state.
Thanks, Denise. Well done. We appreciate it. I think I got everybody from out of town. Anybody did I miss from out of town that didn't get a chance to talk with us? Okay, let's circle back then and get the folks from Juneau. Teresa Rodriguez still with us? Teresa? No? Okay, how about Mike Sigler? Mike, still with us from Kids Count? Pardon me? Had to go? Okay, thanks, Mary. Tatiana Schimhuber? Tatiana, still with us? Okay, thank you. How about Andy Story from Kids Count? Andy? And Beth Chapman. Beth, are you still with us? Okay. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning. Thanks for being with us. Yes, thank you. My name is Andy Story, and I'm a mother of two students in the Juneau School District, Alaska Public Schools, a member of the Juneau School Board, and a member of Alaska Kids Count. I'm here to testify in support of a student-based allocation of $5,120. $4,919, as you've heard earlier, means $300,000 in cuts to Juneau. As a school board member, I follow what you do closely because you appropriate the money, I allocate it. I go to public budget hearings, hear parents come in. Right now with the counselors, we've heard testimony. My child, they've caught my credit deficiencies. They're going to graduate. Please don't cut this service. The counselors have been saying this really helps us lower our caseload and ensure graduation success for more kids. So also busing has been an issue. We're proposed to cut three busing routes, which is $150,000. And of course we've heard pleas from parents saying, you know, I don't want my seven-year-old to walk to school. They're concerned about safety. These are very, you know, real concerns that they have. And so of course I'm interested in what you appropriate. One thing that happens is, as a new school board member, I look for, are we asking for too much money? Because I hear when I talk to legislatures, it's a lot of money that education's getting. It's, you know, right behind the permanent fund. Well, I think of the other states. They all have to pay for their students, too. So I went to Education Week, and which they have done a state-by-state report, and we rank 30 out of 50 for what we fund for students in comparison to the other states. That tells me Alaska is below average in what we pay for our students. It also tells me that the concerns we're hearing from principals, parents, school boards, that it is reasonable. It's not unreasonable what they're asking for. And to illustrate that even further, every amount of money that you give us an increased student-based allocation, those dollars go for real services. All our sites at the Juneau School District submit an unfunded critical needs list, is what we call it. And they have the service like Yakus. They need more space. And so that's going to cost $85,000, which is an $11 increase in the foundation formula. To keep our dropout prevention counselors, that is a $33 increase. For the buses, it's $20. So my point is, in your districts, everywhere in the state, the more you can give us in that student-based allocation, you are buying a real concrete service for your district and for the kids of Alaska. And so I would just really encourage you to fund Alaska Kids above average, not below average. And I did type my testimony because I didn't know if I would get it in. And so if I could leave that for the record, I would appreciate that.
Good. Thank you, Andy. Well done, and thank you for your service to the system on the school board. Appreciate it very much. Let's see. Kristen Romanoff, if you would. Kristen, join us. Amy Skilbert, is Amy with us? Amy, if you'd come forward, please. Good morning, Kristen. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for your time. And my name is Kristen Romanoff. I'm a parent of two children in the Juneau schools, and I speak on behalf of myself and my two children. I have also a member of Alaska Kids Count and an educator with over 20 years experience teaching. And there's been plenty of testimony today to speak to the importance of the classroom experience for children and class size affecting that experience. So I want to share a little bit of a different twist on that notion, because I recently have become quite alarmed personally with the number of families that I personally know that either have left the state or have plans to leave the state or are reluctant to return to Alaska because of the condition of our educational system. And I'm going to share an example. I have close family friends that are spending a year in another state addressing some family issues, taking care of family issues, and have enrolled their children in public school in another state. And they are very thoughtfully considering not returning to Alaska because of the comparison they themselves are experiencing in the quality of the educational experience of their children. And knowing that in returning to Juneau, that their children will not get the kind of education that they're receiving now elsewhere. And I know of other families who are looking at other states, and the first thing that they're looking too, in the communities that they're potentially moving to, is what is the PTR in those communities? What is the student allocation in the schools? And that's of the highest priority in their consideration for where they'll be. I find it ironic that the state of Alaska has spent incredible resources attracting people to the state, providing permanent fund dividends, drawing state employees years back with the Tier 1 benefit plan. It was an amazing program in place to bring people to the state. And here we are seeing the deterioration of our schools over the past decade or more and running this incredible risk of losing residents of this state and having them leave the state. Not only is that of great concern for me, but the fact that will families decide to move to Alaska? Our economy depends on working, dedicated families to stay and remain in Alaska. And looking at where we are now and the fact that our educational system is not prioritized is of great concern to me. And I speak to you today in hopes that not only will you provide equitable education to all of our kids in Alaska, but you'll provide high quality education because they are our future, and I really support increasing the funding beyond what's currently available. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Kristen. Well done. Thanks for joining us this morning. Morning, Amy. Your testimony, if you would, please.
Good morning. My name is Amy Skilbred, and I'm a parent of two children who are in the Juneau school system, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. I appreciate the testimony that several people who are on school boards or members of administrative part of schools and their testimony for trying to change incrementally a trend over time to increase the funding. As a parent, that's not good enough, though, because my kids are going through the system right now. And as we hit high school, which is where my daughter is, the classes are 30-plus kids. Not everybody fits. Not enough desks, not enough books, things like that. Real basic things are missing. With a child in middle school, he's gone through an elementary school with great teachers, but with 26 to 28, sometimes 29 kids in the classroom, and that's not good enough. As a parent, I'm asking you to make a positive difference in the classrooms next year, not a trend in 5 years where we get back to where we might have been if there weren't the cuts that have been we've had over the years. If we as a state can use the permanent fund to develop our resources, we should be able to find funding to develop our most valuable resources, which is our children. And so I appreciate the work you have to do. I know you have to balance things, but we can find the money to do this, and we can find the money to make sure that every district gets what they need for school funding. So I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Amy, for being here this morning. Senator Bundy.
I just want to hasten to add before they come with the tar and feathers, it's the earnings of the permanent fund.
I assure you, I understand it's the earnings of the permanent fund, not the principal.
Thank you.
Okay, that's my list. Is there anyone in the room that we didn't have an opportunity to hear from this morning? Well, thank you for your patience and your brevity, I guess. I think we're finished with public testimony on House Bill 1. We'll hold the bill. Anticipation of Senator Green picking it up early on next week. Let's see. Tomorrow, we were scheduled to hear the PERS and TERS bill, and I understand, Senator Seven, it's not quite with us yet, so we will. We won't meet tomorrow. Finance will meet neither tomorrow morning nor on Friday morning. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we adjourn and head directly to the floor? With that, thanks, everybody. Thanks for your help. We're adjourned.